RadioInfluence.com.
Introducing the world's heavyweight champion, the Crusher!
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
All right, and welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. This is Crush Performance, and you can get to us online with questions, comments, and smart remarks, as mentioned, at crushperformance.com. Follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and on Facebook. If you are on Facebook, get in the talent grid. We have a great little community going there where we're just putting together all the top research, all the experts, some of our athletes, pro athletes, and the sports scientists as well, coaches, athletic trainers, all together to just share information. And it's been a ton of fun. And that's the talent grid on Facebook. So apply to join there. Today, a real important show. This is something that we talk about, you know, every couple of years, and it just doesn't seem to get away. Today, we are going to tear into the topic of early specialization and specialization in sport because we have to. In a recent article that came out about 2 weeks ago, specialization in sport is now being pegged into the, I guess, category of a major health crisis, and for good reason. If we look at what's happening in sport, not just in terms of the dropout rates at the age 13 and 14, which are as high as 70%, we're also seeing astronomical injury rates like we've never seen before. And again, you know, we talk about this in baseball all the time on the show. In 2014, there were more Tommy John and shoulder surgeries in professional baseball in April and May of 2014 than the entire decade of the 1990s. And when we try to decipher that and figure out what's going on, well, you know, we try to break down mechanics. We try to break down overuse and pitch counts and inning counts. And then we looked at the big picture, and the consensus is this is the first generation of baseball players who didn't play any other sport. They're coming in to pro ball and advancing their careers damaged goods. And how do we stave that and give athletes opportunity not only to make it to pro sports or to college or to at least chase down their dream of getting to the next level of a game? It's certainly by diversifying today. If you look at the pro athletes that are out there, the college athletes, the majority of them were multi-sport athletes. So the question today, do you think it's a good idea to specialize early or not? Connor, you've played, you've coached, and there's a lot of things going on in sport today at the developmental levels and certainly at the pro levels that are just steering us towards a specialization. And I'm not sure it's a good thing. Well, as a matter of fact, I know it's not a good thing.
Yeah, I know. It's been a pretty popular discussion on this show. Just, you know, the burnout factor with kids playing, just for example, hockey year round. I know with the sports that I've coached, you can tell the kids that have done other sort of things. You know, they have a little bit, you know, different abilities, things they're able to do just in terms of basic athleticism. So for me, it's an easy choice. I think, you know, if you're playing hockey, you know, all winter long, maybe you opt for baseball or you get out for soccer for the 2 or 3 month schedule just to work on, you know, coordination, hand eye, things like that. And I think it can really benefit you in, you know, other aspects of sport.
No, there's no question. And that's a real important conversation, but you can't ignore the limelight and the money involved. And when you see guys like Tiger Woods or the Williams sisters aspire to the highest level of the game and not just get there, but dominate, knowing that at the age of 3 and 4, Tiger Woods had a golf club in his hand and didn't do much else.
Yeah. I mean, and if you're a kid that, you know, you want to keep playing hockey, let's say there's all these hockey academies popping up, right? So you want to play year round. Your friends are doing it. And maybe as a parent who's a little unsure, you're thinking, if I don't put him in that academy, he's going to fall behind. These kids are going to learn more. They have, you know, more off ice training, more on ice training, and it's just going to hurt them. So you kind of get sucked into it, don't you?
Yeah, you certainly do. And today we're going to go over the numbers. We're going to look at the science, and we're going to talk with Dr. David Bell, the assistant professor at the Department of Kinesiology, Orthopedics, and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin. He and his research group have done some fantastic work focusing on specialization because most of the data that we have is, I don't want to say it's hearsay, but it's feedback from doctors and things that they are experiencing at their clinics. It's coming from coaches and coming from parents and athletes, there's very little actual data and studies that point to the exact number or the trends that we're seeing in terms of numbers and actually quantifying it as to what's happening so we can correct it. So today we're going to get into that because they have some great data coming out and it's pretty surprising. And we're also later in the show going to talk about why kids love sport in the first place. There's a couple great studies done and they questioned a ton of young athletes. I think the answers are going to surprise you because it also lets us know why kids are dropping out at such alarming rates. You know, when I was growing up, Connor, I was a multi-sport athlete and, you know, it's treated me really well in my profession now working in sport performance and athlete development because I got good at a lot of different sports. The problem is I didn't get great at anything. You know, if you look at specialization, you know, just from maybe an observation point of view or, you know, stepping back from sports and looking at it, it kind of makes sense. If you have a young athlete that loves a sport, as you mentioned, and just wants to play with his pals and get out there, it kind of makes sense to just feed that passion and let him play. But there's a massive downside as well. But it kind of makes sense. On the other side, you know, we don't want to limit their options in terms of going into another sport. One of the downsides of specialization. And not only that, we also know that specializing at the long end in the top end can really limit the ceiling of potential when it comes to the upper limits of talent development.
Crash, you're throwing a lot my way. I don't have any kids, but I'm already torn. I think I'm going to flip-flop here, be sitting on the fence because I wouldn't even know which way to go. It's almost, you know, just it's got to be on a case-to-case basis because there's guys that have played hockey their whole lives, you know, played in the academies and become superstars. And then you've got to think there's people that played a lot of different sports. And I think you see it a lot, you know, with basketball, football, baseball, more so down in the States where these guys can play all these sports. And it really ends up with one of them, taking over the other, whether it's, you know, going into college, playing football, and, you know, you use all those things you learn. But it varies kid to kid, I think.
Yeah, it does. And you have to handle it properly. So if you're a young parent or a parent of young athlete, you got to be smart about this and you got to make right decisions. Do you support that passion and get them in there? Or do you force them to get into other sports? Because in the long run, it might be the right thing to do. Today, we're going to get to those answers for sure. But, you know, you mentioned it. We have those athletes who specialize that we see in the limelight. We have Tiger Woods, the Williams sisters. We could probably point out a bunch more, but then we have those other ones, you know, the greats like Bo Jackson, you know, football and baseball, and he could have played any sport. There's no question about it. Steve Nash attributes a lot of his success in basketball to the fact that he played soccer as a young athlete and the team play, his physical ability and agility, he attributes a lot to soccer. You know, Jerome Iginla constantly talks about his passion for baseball as a young athlete coming up, a multi-sport athlete. And, you know, there's many more, you know. So when we look at all these athletes that aspire to the highest level, it's not necessarily the ones who specialize. But at some point, you do have to hone in on a sport if you're going to chase down the dream of getting to the next level.
Yeah, and just one more thing. I mean, you can look at all the tight ends in the NFL and some of the guys in the CFL. All the college or high school basketball experience they have, it translates. There's things that can really help you benefit. We got a text here at 101260. Crush, what age do you believe it's all right for an athlete to shift into one sport?
Yeah, well, okay, and here's sort of the deal. We have the early specialization sports, which would be like female gymnastics, where athletes sort of peak at, believe it or not, 14 or 15 years of age. Early specialization is a must there. Figure skating kind of falls into that realm as well, because, you know, these young skaters really do develop those skills early, and it's such a technical sport. So other than those two sports, you know, you have to look at the age of 12, 13, or 14 as sort of the turnover. Specializing before the age of 12 is a real dangerous shell game you're playing. I'm telling you right now. And so you look at the Canada Sport for Life model and the long-term athlete development program, whether you're familiar with it or not, if you're a parent of a young athlete, heck, if you're an athlete, certainly a coach of an athlete, you need to go on to Canada Sport for Life. I've just been lucky enough to travel around the world and work for Major League Baseball and consult with a bunch of different organizations in terms of high performance athlete development. And in every corner of the earth, sporting organizations are looking to Canada's Sport for Life long-term athlete development program to look for smart guidelines in terms of development. And if we look at that model, they have about 7 stages of development. Stage 1 is just, you know, it's an active start, 0 to 6 years old. okay? But it goes up. And this kind of tells an interesting story. When girls get to age 6 to 8, boys 6 to 9, fundamentals. This is where you got to learn fundamental movement skills, and you got to start to enjoy sport and start socializing in sport, because there's a socialization thing there that can really carry you to the next level. Stage 3 is a stage called learn to train. Girls are 8 to 11 at this age. Boys are 9 to 12 years of age. And in the learn to train, you're learning to practice with a team. You're learning to break down and learn skills, but you're also starting to train as an athlete in the different parameters of athlete development. Real important time. Listen, at the age of 11, 12, and 13, it's one of the most critical times in athlete development, because that's where skill acquisition happens. So if you specialize into one sport before that age, these young athletes lose such opportunity to acquire skills, tactical, technical knowledge, but also just working with teams, movement skills, and the variety of things that multiple sports will give you to carry them to the next level. Then we get to train to train. This is where it gets a little more serious. You start getting to 11 to 15 years for boys, for girls, and boys are 12 to 16 years of age. This is an important age, because now you're starting to get a little more serious. And this is where I think, Connor, most young athletes start choosing which sport they're going to try to pursue. High school sports. And we see in the bigger cities, there's more specialization than in the smaller communities. We could talk about that later for sure. But also, this is where you're getting into more serious levels of the sport. And if you want to chase down a college scholarship or a pro draft or a national team, this is when you start getting noticed. So this is probably where you start thinking about specializing or honing in on a couple different sports. Stage 5 is called train to compete. Now listen, this is where specialization really comes in, where you start honing in. And not only have you learned the skill set of a sport, but now you're learning how to compete. And then it's train to win, because getting good competition and learning to win is a skill set. And then, of course, for the athletes that don't make it, it's active for life. So the goal of the LTAD is not to create high-performance athletes. It's just a great byproduct of this program.
Crush, we've got another text coming in here, and we should let everyone know if you do have any questions, let us know at 10-12-60. Standard message rates do apply. It comes from Bruce. It says, so Crush, am I to infer that you believe that college summer basketball leagues like the WNBL are a bad thing? And from what I understood from what you were saying, when you're at the collegiate level, you're already specialized.
Yeah, and that at that age, no, you have to specialize, but you also have to get away from the sport, because, you know, when we look at it, and this is where athlete management comes into play. When you're specialized, and we're talking about, is it baseball or basketball?
Oh, sorry, summer baseball.
Yeah, summer baseball. I mean, that's the baseball season. So at that level, no, you're a specialized athlete by that point. When you get into college, now, in the off season, here's what we do with our elite athletes, whether it's our junior hockey players, our national team guys, whether it's a baseball, volleyball, soccer, even our track and field guys, we try to get them in the off season into sports that really are meaningful for their main game. So for baseball guys, for example, even with the Blue Jays, I would get the guys who I would work with in the off season onto the squash courts, you know, not playing tennis. The tennis serve is way too dangerous and damaging, not playing volleyball or basketball, but squash, especially for our middle infielders. Badminton would be a good one as well. Anything that creates movement. I think when you look at athlete and the progression of athlete development, once an athlete is specialized, it becomes athlete management. And once you do become specialized at the age 14, 15, 16 years of age, you have to be really smart about what you're doing in terms of your training. Because, Connor, here's where the training program, the strength and conditioning, the agility, the movement, has to compensate for the lack of experience that you're missing, that you would get in other sports, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of what we're looking at. And that's a great question. So, you know, when we look at the age, and it's quite evident in the research, the age of 12 is sort of the breaking point. Some studies say specializing before the age of 10 is really risky business. It's an important conversation. The injury rates are up. We'll talk about those stats. The dropout rates are staggering. We'll talk about those stats. And we're also going to look at the impact of specialization on long-term athlete development. Coming up after the break here, Dr. David Bell, assistant professor at the Department of Kinesiology, Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin will join us. And we're going to talk to them about their findings on the injury rates related to specialization right after this on Crush Performance.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We've got something for everybody. National sports radio talents such as the fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. And the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. New shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. Entertainment shows like LOL with Nancy Alexander. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Legend.
We've got you covered.
You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Each week, we look at the latest trends and research coming out of the performance world to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it takes to achieve human maximum performance. And athletes, now you can do just that as Crush Performance presents the Sport Matrix, the program for top performance in sport. For more information, go to crushperformance.com and join us Wednesday evenings at 7, Saturdays at 4. We're here to help you think like an athlete.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to Crush Performance. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass. We're your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Today, a very important conversation, specialization and early specialization in sport. What is it doing to our athletes? The text question of the day. I want to get this in. There's been some great and interesting texts coming in. We'll get to them next segment. But you can get in on the Crush text and Twitter question of the day brought to you by Sherwood Dodge Chrysler Jeep and World Health and Fresh Fit Foods. To specialize or not to specialize, Connor? That is the question of the day. We're going to pick somebody from our text and Twitter pool at Jeff Crush. Text 101260 to win a free oil change from Sherwood Dodge Chrysler Jeep. So, it's a very important conversation as we tear into a specialization in sport. Just when you think you're giving your young athlete every opportunity to get an edge and get ahead, the science comes out, the data starts hitting mainstream media, and we see that the odds of being successful in sport drop when you specialize, and the data is out there. The question again, do you think it's a good idea to specialize early or not? We look at great athletes like Tiger Woods or the Williams sisters, who we know specialized right from day one into their particular sports and made it. But then we also look at great athletes like Bo Jackson, Steven Nash. And we look at, you know, guys like Gretzky, who, you know, played baseball when he was a young athlete. Sidney Crosby, Jerome Iginla. We can go sport by sport and talk about all these athletes. When we start listening to what the head coaches of pro organizations are saying in some of the big colleges, they're also looking for multi-sport athletes. And then some of the entrance and interviews that they have at combines and in recruiting trips, they also are talking about what other sports did you play? Well, there's a downside to specialization, and the numbers are becoming more and more clear all the time. We're joined right now by Dr. David Bell, assistant professor at the Department of Kinesiology, Orthopedics, and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin. He's also the director of the Wisconsin Injury in Sport Laboratory. Dr. Bell, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, a very important conversation as we look at specialization in sport. You know, it seems to make sense if you're a parent or a young athlete to get into a sport that you're passionate about and do as much of it as possible to get an edge, to do well, and just, I guess, to maybe satiate your desire to play the sport, which is fantastic. But there may be long-term drawbacks, and that's kind of what the discussion is today.
Yeah, that's right. Our laboratory has been focusing on sports specialization for the past couple of years and how it's related to injury. We've defined sports specialization as year-round intensive training in a single sport at the exclusion of other sports. And so, you know, we've been kind of following the trends of injuries that have been occurring for the past few years, specifically related to, you know, I'm sure as your listeners know, Tommy John surgery in baseball athletes, cartilage damage in baseball athletes in the elbow, and even in other sports like soccer injuries, we're seeing ACL injury rates on the rise. And sports specialization gets blamed for these injuries, but there hasn't been a whole lot of empirical evidence that's really been able to link sports specialization with with the actual injury itself. And so that's what we've been focusing on over the past couple of years.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that, you know, we try to find a solution to a problem. And, of course, injuries in sport is one of the number one, you know, issues. I think even in participation, you know, lower level, you know, the weekend warrior recreational sport, but also in young developmental sport as well, where it's so important. Because I think, as you know, we talk about all the time, one of our prime directives is to keep people active in sport. And we know that if an athlete has one or even on the second injury that takes them away from a sport, the dropout rates increase even greater than they are. And it's already devastating when we look at the dropout rates 13, 14 years of age. So what have you found in your research in terms of the injuries? Do we have something we could sink our teeth into now?
Yeah, well, we're certainly getting there. There was recently a scale that was developed by Nehru Gianti, who is out of Emory University in Atlanta, and has published a scale that kind of helped define sports specialization for us to make it a little easier to study. And it's really just three questions. And so if you sit there and you have a youth athlete, you can ask them these three questions to get a sense of how highly specialized they might be. If they answer yes to all three of these questions, then they would be considered kind of a highly specialized athlete. If they answered yes to two, then they would be a moderate athlete, moderately specialized athlete. And then one or zero is low-level specialization. So the questions are, have you quit other sports to focus on one sport? Do you train more than 8 months out of the year in a single sport? And do you consider your primary sport more important than other sports? So that's the scale. And you can ask, and it's a great way to have a and start a dialogue with your kid or your parent or your coach to see what's appropriate. Because we certainly have some recommendations here that have started in the baseball literature, but now we're finding that they do have some evidence and link with injury risk in other sports that aren't upper extremity related, like baseball, like soccer, for example. So we know that answering yes to these three questions makes you more at risk for a lower extremity injury if you're a soccer player, if you're a basketball player, so on and so forth. You know, our recommendations here that we've come up with and that we've worked with other people on are basically to not train more than 8 months per year in a single sport, to take breaks if possible. We know that this is hard to do. You know, we hear a lot from parents sometimes that it's not necessarily the kid or the parent that's pushing it, but sometimes coaches and other organizations are pushing to play in multiple seasons of the same sport. So as soon as your fall soccer season is over, you know, now you can go and play indoor winter soccer, so you can maintain that competitive edge. And then also, as soon as the weather gets nice, now you're enrolled back into the spring soccer league and then also the summer soccer league. So the recommendation right now is to try to take 4 months off per year and to do something else. The other recommendation that exists is to not train more hours per week than your age.
And oh, okay.
So if you have a 13-year-old daughter or son, then the rule of thumb there is that they should be participating in organized athletics about 13 hours per week, right? So, you know, if they went up to 15 hours per week, I probably wouldn't sweat it too much. But if they're doing 20 to 25 hours a week, they're probably at increased risk of injury.
Well, and so that's an interesting one, because we look at some of the programs now and they're tipping the scales into sort of a pro-like practice and competitive schedule now. So that's an interesting one. Never more hours in your sport than your age. That's a great guideline.
Yeah, it's a rule of thumb. And again, these are general guidelines.
Yeah.
And so there are pros and cons to those. I mean, we like that they are general, and that, you know, you could have a conversation with these in your physician's office. They're easy to remember. You know, the limitation is they're not really geared down to different sports quite yet.
Right.
So it's really hard to say if the recommendations will end up being the same for soccer as they are for baseball. You know, and that's our pediatricians that we work with. You know, they use this as a screening tool. So they sit there and when a child is in there with their parent at the pediatrician and they're in there for some sort of orthopedic condition, you know, they'll ask them, okay, how many hours per week does your child participate in sport? You know, and they'll begin to count those hours up, and you can kind of see their eyes getting wide. You know, it's something really easy that can get away from people really quickly with all the demands that are on people's times these days.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the other side of sports specialization. You know, we have sports specialization, but with the pendulum swings too far the other way, you know, we're worried about large volume of participation as well. So, you know, think about it. We have sometimes, I had an email from a person in Baltimore who said, you know, we could specialize in all the sports all the time. Is it better to do multiple sports at the same time, or is it better to do a single sport? Because if you just looked at the sports specialization literature, you say, oh, sports specialization is bad. It's better to have my kid do lacrosse and soccer at the same time. And in our experience, that's probably equally as bad, right? Because that's more volume. They're participating in multiple leagues at the same time, and that could be just as damaging as sports specialization alone. So we're trying to figure out where that sweet spot is in terms of undertraining and balancing specialization and volume.
We're talking with Dr. David Bell, the director of the Wisconsin Injury and Sport Laboratory at the University of Wisconsin. Dr. Bell, well, a bunch of very interesting things we just mentioned there. This idea of overuse injuries is sort of synonymous with specialization. If we look at, you know, as you mentioned, a soccer season, for example, and one of the issues we really do have to face is the organizations who are saying, okay, look, you're playing on our elite outdoor team, and therefore you have to be on our elite indoor team, and if you don't play on the indoor team, you're not going to be on the outdoor team. There is this industry that has come around in developmental sports that is probably driving some of the issues we're seeing in sport. And, you know, when we look at specialization in sport, you know, one particular sport stressing muscles and, you know, very certain movement patterns, creating asymmetries. We see a real strong correlation with the overuse injuries. That makes sense. And I think that speaks volumes for getting involved in a balanced way, as you mentioned, into other sports. In terms of the injury side alone, I think that's an important aspect to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're going to be one of those elite athletes that you know, thinks you might have a future in sport and that you're going to get a college scholarship, I mean, the evidence of participating in some sort of evident injury prevention program is really, really good. You know, we know that we can prevent injuries if we have people participate in, you know, a dynamic warm-up program that has some of the injury reduction components in it, in soccer, for example. You know, we know we can reduce ACL injury rates by about 50% if people participate in those. The problem is people like to play their sport and they don't like to do the dynamic warm-up and do those things simultaneously. So if you're going to be a specialized athlete, it's really, really important that they take care of their body, right? And that they and that they participate in an injury prevention program.
Isn't it interesting, you know, that you, a couple of the surveys we looked at and a couple of the research studies, when we talked about college athletes, the majority and the big majority of college athletes who were successful in scholarships were multi-sport athletes up to that certain age when I guess you're almost forced to or where you need to specialize in your sport to compete at higher levels.
Yeah, and we've seen that in our athletes as well, that they usually take longer to specialize, and we think that there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, we think that they're just obviously really talented athletes,
right,
and that they have the opportunity to make a lot more rosters, right? So if, you know, and I went to a small high school when I was growing up, and so I can think back and think of the really talented, athletically gifted people. They could walk onto the basketball court or onto the soccer field, and they were just so talented in that respect that they had the opportunity to play more. So that's part of it. And every coach would always welcome those athletes onto their team. Right?
Absolutely.
The other part of it is that, but we know that there are some sports that are specific to specialization, right? And especially early specialization, like gymnastics, for example, or mm-hmm. tennis. And there are some sports that are still lend themselves to being multi-sport athletes. For example, American football, right? If you look at those athletes, our data supports the notion that those athletes are less likely to be highly specialized athletes because football is still played, you know, in the late summer, early fall, and sometimes into the winter in high school. And so, you know, those athletes are not really going to necessarily play organized football in the same traditional sense that they would play in the fall. Maybe they do 7-on-7, but those athletes are much more likely to go and join the track team,
right?
For example, to do something different, but to still maintain their competitive atmosphere.
Well, we're talking with Dr. David Bell, assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin in the Department of Kinesiology, Orthopedics, and Rehabilitation. It's very interesting. You know, we see a graph coming out of University or Ohio State, Urban Meyer, talking about his recruits from 2014, I believe, and the fact that the majority of those recruits were multi-sport athletes, as you mentioned, in the football program. Dr. Bell, I wonder, in your research and experiences there at the University of Wisconsin, are you guys seeing a big issue, I guess maybe more in the developmental sports where the seasons are getting longer, and now we have all these programs that are dedicated and focused on athlete development, and again, I don't want to say they're focused on specialization, but they're running their businesses around revenues generated from kids inside of a sport, for indoor baseball programs, for example, or, you know, club soccer or club volleyball. You know, some of these clubs are getting very expensive, but the competitive and practice calendars now, boy, it's a really changing environment out there when it comes to developmental sport.
Yeah, it really is. And so, you know, there are different organizations that are out there, like Project Play out of the Aspen Institute,
right,
that are kind of focusing on access to sports from a, you know, a larger sense rather than just specialization, because we're worried about the kids that specialize, but we're really worried about the kids in terms of participation in physical activity that get funneled out of participation. Because, I mean, the reason that we like team sports is that it's a great way for kids to maintain physical activity. And so, you know, if kids are being selected or they can only afford to participate, to join these teams because they have the means to do so, I mean, that's particularly worrisome, but we're also worried about those kids that don't have the opportunity, maybe don't have the income, you know, aren't part of that group that can, you know, pay for those constant participation in sport.
Right.
How do they get, mm-hmm. How do they maintain their physical activity? How do they, you know, maintain a healthy lifestyle over the course of their lives? Because we know the kids that are physically active as young people are more likely to be physically active as adults, and that really has long-term consequences on the healthcare and the health of society.
Well, we want people participating well into their adult years. That's the thing. Where yet we're seeing these massive dropout rates at the age of 13 and 14. And some of the data is suggesting that the dropout rates are as high as 70%. And those are real numbers that we have to address right away.
Yeah, I think, and again, there's been some really good research that shows that fun is the number one reason why kids play sports, and lack of fun is the number one reason why kids quit sports. And injury is also up there as well. And again, injury and lack of fun kind of go hand in hand, right? That if you're injured and you can't participate, or you're scared of participation because you're getting injured, those kind of go hand in hand. But, you know, I think one of the big take-home points here also is that we don't want to create a bunch of couch potatoes, right? We don't want kids and parents to hear this and say, oh gosh, well, I can't have my kid not participate in sport. Again, there are so many great aspects of sports participation. We don't want this information to scare athletes or parents. We just really want them to be wise consumers and participate as safely as possible in sport.
Yeah, we're talking with Dr. David Bell from the University of Wisconsin and the director of the Wisconsin Injury and Sport Laboratory. Well, it's a great conversation, and you're right. This is about sharing information so people can move forward in the right way, because I think maybe we've gotten skewed. Again, it makes a lot of sense to look at a sport that you're passionate about, or maybe your young athlete who loves to play, and just try to pursue that as much as possible to get an edge, or just because the young athlete enjoys it. But you have to be aware that there's also potential drawbacks. One, injury, burnout, out. The overuse injury thing is actually a pretty interesting one, though, and it seems to be coming up more and more in the literature. We're seeing it more and more, but it kind of makes sense. If you're only playing one sport, there's only certain demands on the body, you're going to get those muscle imbalances that we see even on our elite athletes, and unfortunately, those don't get addressed. The imbalances and the potential injury risk doesn't get addressed at the developmental levels like it would with our pro guys, so it's something to be aware of. And you mentioned, I think, something that's very powerful. A simple, dynamic, you know, well-rounded warm-up can be a real powerful tool, you know, in a practice or a game situation.
Yeah, exactly. If, you know, our theoretical model kind of exists where we think that injury is related, sports specialization is related to injury. And we think that, you know, obviously people that participate in the same sport are going to be developing this biomechanical profile, like you kind of mentioned, asymmetries already, right? So if you have a soccer player who's playing a lot of soccer, they're overdeveloping their quads, they're underdeveloping their hamstrings.
Right.
What does that mean in the long run in terms of their knee health? Are they setting themselves up for overuse injuries? Are they setting themselves up for even acute injuries like ACL tears? Time will tell. Hopefully we'll get a better sense of that as our research continues. But the way that you have to mitigate that changing biomechanical profile is by either not specializing in sport, doing something different, or participating in an injury prevention program, like we've said.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I like that idea of a biomechanical profile. Dr. Bell, very interesting stuff. We appreciate you and all the work you're doing. Any just sort of general advice for our listeners out there as we move forward here?
Yeah, so, you know, I don't think I can say it enough. You know, make sure your kids are having fun. You know, have a dialogue with them. Again, kind of keep track. You know, use your phone. There's some apps that are being developed right now to figure out, you know, how many hours per week does your child participate in sport. Use that rule of thumb. Don't train more hours per week than your age. Try to take some time off. Try not to participate in multiple leagues at the same time. So, for example, if you have a baseball athlete, they should be participating in one baseball league, not two or three, especially if they're doing a lot of throwing and pitching.
Great stuff. Dr. Bell, well, we appreciate you and your time today. A great conversation.
Thanks for having me.
All right, when we come back, we'll wrap that up. A great conversation and some great advice coming out of the University of Wisconsin and Dr. Bell. So stay tuned. We'll get to the text, and we're going to get to more of the data on specialization in sport right after this on Crush Performance.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kreshel, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We have something for everyone. National sports radio talents like the Fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like Wrestling Soup and the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. News and current event shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger. We've got you covered. You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at CrushPerformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, everybody, back to the show. Jeff Kreshel here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Today, a real important conversation as we delve into the topic of specialization and early specialization in sport. Just a fantastic conversation right there with Dr. David Bell from the University of Wisconsin, looking at their research from their laboratory that's really trying to hammer down on the relationship between the increasing rate of injuries we're seeing at all levels of sport and the concept of specialization. There is absolutely no question that the two are correlated. We're just trying to figure out what does it look like and how can we put a dent in it. That's what the research is all about. Some really good recommendations coming out of the research. I really like this. And their recommendations went down sort of like this. If you have an athlete that loves or prefers a sport, hockey, volleyball, basketball, golf, tennis, it doesn't matter. No more than 8 months a year, max. 4 months dedicated to doing something else.
a real strong recommendation and something that they're seeing in their research that's helping athletes not only develop to higher levels of sport, but also decreasing risk of injuries. And then the other one I thought was really interesting, Connor. Okay. It was looking at the age of your athlete and sort of correlating to the number of hours they're participating in an organized sport to their age. So if you have a 13-year-old baseball player or volleyball player or curler, for that matter, no more than 13 hours of that particular sport over the course of the week. A pretty cool way to, and simple way, I guess, to really sort of organize a weekly schedule.
Yeah, and that to me, that almost just seems like so much, too. 13 years old, 13 hours a week, I don't know, 5 days a week, 2 hours max. It seems like that would almost be too much, but I'm not going to disagree with the doctor.
No, for sure. And I think they're talking here about kids that are really passionate about a sport. As we start getting into that 12, 13, 14 years of age, kids who really focus on a sport are probably going to look at either one, pursuing it to a higher level, or maybe getting on a high school team or a club team, AAA hockey team, to go to the next level. Or they're talking about maybe going for the long haul. College scholarship or professional career, professional draft. So I think that's when athletes start to make those decisions. And it shouldn't be up to the parents. That's more of an athlete-driven decision.
Yeah, I think so too. Crush, let's get to a texter at 10-12-60 coming in from Jared. It might take me a while, but he says, there was an interview with Tom Seaver at an All-Star game talking about arm surgeries, and he believed it was because pitch counts were too low and the arms weren't strong enough because of it. Personally, I believe from my experience playing baseball was when players start lifting weights and there was overuse of certain muscles, it created an imbalance in the arm, let's say, causing undue stress. It's interesting that Mickey Mantle, when he was younger, worked in a zinc mine, swinging sledgehammers over and over again. And when he was tired, he would switch hands, which resulted in switch hitting ability and gave him enormous strength that replicated swinging the baseball motion. And at 5'11", 185, hit several home runs over 600 feet and used the heavier bat. Then 6'6", 265, Mark McGwire, whose longest home run was 535. I think it's a lot of new training. A lot of the new training is hogwash, making players bigger, slightly faster, but not better. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Jared, great. That's a great text, and I love that. I like everything he said. Tom Seaver, of course. Well, Google Tom Seaver if you don't know about Tom Seaver. Hall of Famer, absolute baseball legend. You got to heed those words from Tom Seaver. You know, if you look at Kansas City Royals, George Brett's involved there as a special assistant and advisor. He's in the same sort of mindset that we don't throw enough. Listen, our pro guys throw every single day. When they're done their season, whether it's the end of the playoffs or at the end of the regular season, they don't touch a baseball till December or January, depending on the player. So I think what Tom is saying is right, but here's the problem. What Tom didn't have to deal with back in the day when he was coming up is this early specialization where baseball players started playing baseball, and that's the only sport they played when they're 9, 10, even younger, 8, 7, 8, 9 years of age, where they're going from their summer leagues to their fall league to their winter baseball, and they don't play another sport. There's no question in my mind that the issues we're seeing in baseball are directly related to the first generation of specialized sports. Now, when you talk about Mickey Mantle working in the zinc mines, that's what I'm talking about. Getting away from the game, swinging a sledgehammer, you're absolutely right. Now, another thing that he mentions is the new training being hogwash. Here's what I could say about that. You're on the right track. You've got to be smart. Our number one priority when we get an athlete, I don't care if it's a 10-year veteran all-star, or if it's a young kid just coming into an organization, movement is king. And we've seen careers destroyed in the weight room when the focus is getting bigger and stronger and not necessarily on movement mechanics and the things that are going to make athletes great. The only reason we ever put an athlete in the weight room is to help them become better movers. So Jared, there's a lot of truth to your text, and you're on the right track for sure, but we still have to be careful how we handle our athletes. So it's a great conversation. We could go on for hours. I want to thank everybody for the text. We got to thank Dr. Bell for his comments. And I'm telling you, Connor, the data that we have sitting in front of us right here is overwhelming. Specializing is not a good idea. And specializing early, okay, is definitely a bad idea. There was a study done out of Denmark where they looked at their national caliber athletes. And the athletes that specialized into a particular sport early, they were the dominant athletes up to the age of 15, 16 years of age. But when they broke down who made their national teams, who made professional sport, the athletes that specialized later, 15, 13, 14, and 15 years of age, those are the athletes that took over the pro sports, national team sports, and college scholarships. Though those guys, they put in as much time, they just didn't do it all in one sport. So the conversation goes on. So I want to thank everybody for coming on the show. Thanks for the text. Next week,
more top performance information as we help you think like an athlete right here on Crush Performance. Talk to you then.